everyone. Welcome to Rewatchable episode 134. Big episode today. Hopefully we can make it run pretty smoothly, but we're doing three episodes of covering three episodes this week. We're doing Legend of Korra book four, episodes 7, 8, and 9. So that's Reunion, Remembrances, and Beyond the Wilds. And if you're a super fan, you'll already kind of get the picture as to why, because Remembrances is a clip show episode. So there are some great new moments in it with some of the narration, but it is basically a recap of things we've seen before. So we decided to squish three episodes in here rather than trying to squish three episodes on the finale. So we'll have more time to talk about the finale at the end of the season. So if you want to get in touch with us to talk about the podcast, you can always reach us on rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can reach us on re_watchable. You can comment on this post on hyperbole.com, or you can join us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And your hosts this week, I'm kind of like now having some hysterical nervous laughter because I'm informed that we're the naughty team. It's me, I'm Natalie. We've got newbies, Ariana and Brittany, and we have superfan Donya. And Donya is rather a calm and passive presence, but apparently we had a lot of unpopular opinions last time me, Ariana, and Brittany got together on the podcast, and I haven't been back since, so I don't know what's going on, but I'm informed that there was drama. So hopefully that you'll forgive us and that we'll have some opinions this week that you'll like. Otherwise, you know, feel free to bring your complaints in a respectful way to the hyperbole comments, I suppose. Fun facts very quickly. So that you all know us, if in case you have not heard us before. So my name is Natalie. I'm a super fan. And my fun fact this week is I've read about 100,000 words of Founding Father transcripts of personal letters, mainly Alexander Hamilton, but some coming from other people to Alexander Hamilton. And my eyes are blurry and I am full of words like forsooth. But yeah, that was tiring, but also kind of hilarious, some of the things that I was reading. So that's the kind of nerding out that I've been doing this week in preparation for the podcast that a bunch of us are about to jump on as soon as we finish this one. So who wants to go next?
I'll go next. My fun fact is that I'm doing NaNoWriMo this year. Yay! And I'm at 18,000 words, which means I'm about 5,000 words behind, but that's fine.
Say your name.
Oh, Ariana. Sorry, Ariana.
So that was Ariana. Cool.
Was the whole point of this.
Yes. What is your story about?
Oh, I can't say until it's done. That'll jinx
it. Oh, really? Okay, cool. All right. Brittany?
Hi. I'm Brittany, obviously. And my fun fact is I watched all of these episodes on the bus to work. Well, I watched two on the bus to work and a couple on the way home, and the person next to me was a Korra fan. So they're like, "Are you watching The Legend of Korra?" And I was like, "Yeah, I am, actually. I am on a podcast about it." And they're like, "Oh, that's cool." And then they stopped talking to me. So I finished. They didn't want to know it. They didn't seem interested in the podcast. So,
but they knew what it was. They recognized.
Yeah. Because I was watching it on my phone and I was like, you know, I wasn't hiding it. I like rested my phone on my knee to watch it. And they were like, "Is that Korra?" And I was like, "Yeah, it is." And then that was the end of it. But someone else out there who commutes from New Jersey to New York watches The Legend of Korra.
I recently rewatched the whole thing on a plane. Like before we kind of started season four, I watched all of book four on a plane. And I was kind of thinking, like, what's weirder to watch on a plane where other people can see it? Like, I'm like a nearly 30-year-old woman. Is it weird that I'm watching a cartoon? Or would it be weird if I was watching like a drama, which was like, oh my God, you know, ooh, they're having sex, if you know what I mean? Not like, I wouldn't watch Game of Thrones, probably like where there's like tits out in public. But like stuff where it's like, you know, you can see
definitely
something.
Definitely where people are like having sex. I think that's definitely
weirder. Okay, yeah. Well, that's good.
Because then it's like there's like kids around, and then it's like, what if one like, oh, what's that, mommy?
Like, yeah, I was kind of like, should I watch this or should I watch like, I don't know, something else? Like not like an after the watershed rated show. But I was kind of testing up. I'm like, I'm just going to watch the cartoon, and I don't care if people judge me. But I was thinking, what was worse, to be observed watching. Anyway, Donya, how about you?
I've spent the last week complaining about Downton Abbey, and I don't think I've stopped complaining. That's pretty much been... That's consumed my life for the last week.
Yes. No spoilers for Americans, but...
True.
Yeah. Nobody's happy.
It sucked. okay, we'll talk about that later. I actually might write something about that this week. So, yeah. All right. We'll go into Chapter 7, Reunion. Ariana, would you like to read this synopsis
Read Mitch's beautiful synopsis that I have not read yet, so this should be interesting. Okay. In this chapter, Korra returns to her public city for the first time in 3 years. The Avatar's return stirs the pot of the Korra Mako Asami love triangle, but everything changes when Prince Wu's bladder attacks. Wu is captured, so Mako decides to be the least amount helpful by micromanaging everything the ladies want to do to save the person he is responsible for. Asami and Korra still somehow fight back against Mako's negativity and fuckboyness to save the prince. Meanwhile, Varric and Bolin meet Katara's long-lost, hair-loopy descendant in a group of United Empire rebels.
Oh, isn't that
nice? Like Mako. Mitchell?
Yeah, Mako's being fine. Mitch is clinging on to something that is no longer in existence. He's clearly got a grudge that is, like, not still relevant. So
I actually, I mentioned in Remembrances, because that might be my favorite episode of this season.
Really? So, are you serious?
I think I kind of agree. So.
Oh my god, you guys!
But somewhere while I was watching that, it, like, occurred to me, I was like, huh, Mako used to be my least favorite character. I, like, legit hated him. And now I think he might be my favorite. Like, how did that happen? I just love how, like, grumpy he is.
I like him as well. Like, yeah, it's very much, like,
it reminds me of Zuko. Like, how Zuko was, like, the worst human. And then, like, in the last season, all of a sudden he's like, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like Spike from Buffy as well. Not that Mako was ever evil, but it's kind of like, I really like it when people who start out, like, genuinely shitty turn to just, like, annoying, if you know what I mean, and like, in a cute way. Like, I really enjoy that with characters. So, yeah, I really like that with Mako. Okay, so what have we got here? We've got the first issue is, you know, Korra coming back to Republic City and then having a reunion, basically, you know, her seeing Asami and Mako again for the first time, not Bolin because he's still off with, you know, in the woods, basically. But they kind of, first of all, they kind of think everything's fine and it's a little bit awkward, but then they kind of start, you know, getting on each other's nerves or things about Korra being gone, like, start annoying them and, you know, how is that kind of feeling out period for you guys? Like, do you think that that was realistic? Like, have you had an experience like that where you, like, think something's going to be, like, normal and then you're like, oh, stuff's really changed? Or did you think that there would be more weirdness? Like, Brittany, how did you kind of take that reunion and, like, do you think it was good, bad, etc.?
I loved it. I thought it felt really realistic. I've had, like, friends, you know, who have kept in better touch than I have with other people, like, you know, from high school and stuff like that. And when we kind of get together and, like, you know, you haven't kept in touch with those people, it's so awkward. And then, like, they moved on with their lives. But, I mean, it's a little different for us because we kind of know what's going on with everybody's lives because of Facebook. But you're like, oh, yeah, I saw that on Facebook. And then in this case, it was kind of like, oh, yeah, I read that in your letter. Like, and you're not as good friends with them. So, like, they kind of know what's going on. And it's just so tense. And, like, there's a lot of things you want to say, like, you know, where were you? What are you doing? But you know that they don't want to talk about it. And you don't know what issues are going to become hot button issues. So you're trying to avoid fights. But then you kind of, like, it's so – I loved it. I loved how awkward it was.
I've definitely been the Mako in that situation. Like, I completely understand Korra wanting to – or, like, only feeling comfortable talking to Asami. And she has the right to do that, you know, because she was going through a really difficult time that she wants to confide in only one person. But I'm like, I really like, I felt for Mako there. He's like, wait, like, so I was writing you letters. You wrote back to Asami, but not to me and Bolin. Huh? That kind of sucks because we love you too. So, I mean, I felt for him in that moment.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, like, Okay, why do you think that Cora felt most comfortable writing to Asami but not to the boys? Like, Donya, any theories? Or other girls, any theories about that?
I remember you said something, Brittany. You said something earlier, because I remember I had this question. I was like, but why is she only writing to Asami? Because I didn't feel like she was super close to Asami. I mean, I guess Asami does have, like, a very warm presence to her, but it's not like she never really got closer to her than the others. If anybody, I feel like she was closest to, like, well, she was definitely closest to Mako and Bolin. She, like, they're like her brothers, basically.
Yeah, I think maybe the thing that's going on here is that Asami would give her the best advice, or, like, be able to balance her thoughts a little bit better. I feel like Mako would have been like, when are you coming back? When are you coming back? When are you coming back? And like three sentence letters back to her. And she just didn't have time to read Bolin's novels anymore. So, you know, I think that she chose the best option in what she was given. Cause like, I think writing to Tenzin would have been a bad choice. Jinora would have told Tenzin if she was writing to Jinora, plus Jinora's like what, 15. So I think that she chose the best out of those options that she was given. And I would have chosen Asami, too, I think, even if BFFs with Mako.
I think I would have probably chosen Asami, too. So that's the only thing that makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the distance is, like, kind of a good thing as well, in a way. Like, sometimes, like, when you have something that you want to talk to someone about, sometimes, like, talking about it to someone who, like, wasn't wrapped up in it is kind of, like, better, if you know what I mean. Like, it's kind of... you know, someone who doesn't have so much of an, like, wouldn't have, like, a subjective opinion on, like, what it meant to them. I feel like, you know, Asami has been her friend, but, you know, I think that there's the amount of distance. Often when there's, like, an issue, I don't know, maybe that's just me, but, like, often when there's an issue, you know, and you get talking to someone about it, you can get close to someone that you weren't close to someone before because... the very reason that it was initially easy for you to kind of talk to them about it is that they weren't as close, because sometimes closeness doesn't necessarily mean like trusting them with everyone. Sometimes like closeness is too close, so you don't want to like hurt them, or you don't know how to relate to them because they have like a preconceived idea of you, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. I think Mako and Bolin both definitely see Cora a certain way, and maybe she was worried about disappointing them.
I don't know. Did you guys expect Asami to snap like that when Cora, you know, started talking about her father, though? Like,
I was so glad when she did.
Really?
Yeah, no, I was pretty glad because it made me really happy when Asami finally got a storyline and like that she was, you know, she was upset with her dad and that made sense. But then she was making an effort to reconcile, because I think it is, if you are able to find it in your heart to do that, I think it takes a lot, and I think it's very brave of you, and so you should, good for you. And Cora being like, it's like, Cora, you know nothing. You've been gone. Shut up.
Wow.
Yeah, and I have a feeling that those letters were very one-sided. It was more or less Cora being like, here are my problems, and not so much like, Asami, how are you doing? How are things with your dad? Have you spoken to anyone? That's just my feeling on it. This is why everyone hates me.
You think Cora wrote to Asami about herself
Asami was probably like, "Oh, it's okay. Don't worry about it. We're still here for you."
And that's fine, because that's what Cora needed in that moment, and I'm not judging her for it. But at the same time, like, she can't come back and then be offering like unsolicited advice like that.
Are we at the point where we can spoil, like, hashtag the thing yet? Because
I have some questions, because I'm pretty upset, because I've been waiting for the thing, and I'm like, we're in episode, like, 10 now, or whatever, and, like,
well, it's still not happening. Finale.
I have something really good that I want to say about it that's very relevant to right now, but that I don't think I can say. I don't know, I think
you should say it, but don't say it.
There is no way to say it but not say it.
But is it like the moment when they see each other in this thing? Because
No. It's a thing about Cora writing to Asami. It's my opinion on what you guys are talking about with Cora writing to Asami. I have read an interesting post about humanity, and that is very significant to this. And I can see the relation of it to Cora, and I can't explain further than that. Why? Without spoiling the
thing. What if we say, like, okay, stop now, and then we'll do like a 2-minute thing where you talk about
okay,
this thing.
Okay, fine. All right. Okay, guys, if you don't want to know what the thing is, hashtag the thing, stop now, and we will. I'm going to talk about something to do with the thing, and then go forward about probably only about 90 seconds or 2 minutes, and then come back in. Just fast forward. I am warning you. I am really sorry if you catch any bit of it, but I this is so good that I can't not say it. All right. The thing. We're talking about the thing. Fast forward 2 minutes. Okay, so there's this Tumblr post, which is a person talking about how every unrequited, like, person that she's ended up who's been in love with her, like a girl, every guy who's been in love with her in an unrequited way, it's turned out it's only been because they've thought they're in love with her because she's just basically been a good friend to them. Like, she's been like, you know, she's like, they know nothing about her whatsoever, nothing about her life, but because she's been like what she considers to be a decent human being, like, you know, emotionally supportive, like listening to their problems and stuff like that, that they get this idea that they're like super emotionally close because this person now knows everything about them, but that they don't realize that, like, actually being in love with someone is like doing that for someone else as well, if you know what I mean. And so it's just making me think of Cora and Asami. And how Cora is apparently playing the oblivious dude in this relationship,
yes,
who ends up, you know, thinking that she's in love with Asami because Asami has been a good friend to her, whereas she actually hasn't done the same back.
Well, this is what bothers me because I thought that the thing was going to be like this beautiful, romantic, life-changing cartoon thing. But I'm like, no, I feel like, I mean, obviously I understand why she's in love with Asami because Asami's great, but like, why would Asami like Cora? I don't know.
Maybe she feels the need. She needs to like take care of someone, which is fine. That's a type of person. But I thought that it was going
to
happen in the next episode.
Herself,
yeah,
in front of people, like with Mako, she's just like Mako.
Hmm.
I'm just like Cora. Hey.
Anyway, okay, we've stopped talking about the thing. It's been, like, less than 2 minutes. We've stopped talking about the thing. We're going to move on to something else. Anyway, the way she described it in this post was exactly how I feel about Cora right now. But anyway, let's carry on. So where are we? Mako, you didn't disturb Cora's pen palship. Mako hasn't done anything wrong at this point. Cora just didn't know what to say to him. Mitch, stop being such a dick. Okay.
We're Mitch. Maybe that's the reason why they hate us.
He's all of the commenters. It's all him on different accounts. Okay. Aww. No, sorry. All right. Let's see. Cora connecting to the spirit vines to find Prince Wu was kind of convenient, mainly because I still don't understand how Toph could do that in the first place to even teach Cora. This is a part of a bigger issue that, I don't know, Donya, after watching the show through, you know, a couple of times, there is a lot of sort of convenient, I guess, for the lack of a better word, magic. Like, we're not talking about just being able to bend. We're talking about, like, spirit stuff, like Janora and stuff like that. Do you think that it's kind of too much like a Deus Ex Machina, or do you think that, like, it's just stuff that we've never seen before? Like, there is a lot of, like, convenient spirit stuff done in the last couple of seasons of Cora that we never saw in the Avatar world before.
Yeah, no, I think it is for convenience's sake. And I don't know if it's necessarily because the episode amounts were cut a lot more, so they didn't have as long a season to be able to explore it. So, it just, like you said, it's just a little convenient sometimes. And even after rewatching it, it's a little bit more like, I don't know, it just doesn't work sometimes for me. The fact that these things happen and it's just like, hey, this is great. We're just not going to explain how that's come to be at all. Next point, let's go. And it bothers me a little bit.
Which of what we've seen so far is the most, like, really, really, guys, to you? Like, is it stuff with Cora or is it stuff with Janora or what?
It's a little bit of a mixture of both. Like, the stuff with Jinora being very, very spiritual is actually a really nice counterpoint to Korra, who hasn't been as connected to it up until this mm-hmm. point. But at certain points of the story, the fact that she can use that really conveniently to just
the way that she pops
things.
In and is like in the you know in episode 9 where she's like, Korra, they've got me, I'm coming, like the way she can just like pop herself into yeah. places, it's we've never seen a character that really does that before, and I find it quite weird. I don't know.
Yeah. But some of the Korra stuff as well. I mean, it's not exclusive to any particular character, and I always wonder if it's just because of the reduced episode counts in the season, so...
I don't know. What about you guys? Like, Ariana and Brittany, do you kind of feel the difference with that sort of spirit magic stuff compared to, like, Avatar The Last Airbender? Do you kind of
Or like those giant turtles that came out of nowhere and saved yeah. the world in Avatar?
That was different! That was different! You already... Mm. You always knew that there were, like, weird animals all over the Avatar
yeah, but
world.
That was a little...
It's exactly the same.
Yeah. It is not. I suppose Aang did turn into that big fish thing. Or, you know, he made that fish. I don't know, but what about the stuff with, like, Jinora and, like, the spirit... And Korra and the spirit vines? Like, what is the spirit vine tracking thing? Like, can anyone do that?
Korra doing the spirit vines makes sense to me because she's like the Avatar, so she's special. Mm. But like, Mitch is right. The Toph thing with the spirit vines does not make sense to me because that's not Earth. That's yeah,
and,
if anything, it's water. It's
and
not
Toph
Earth.
Was never that spiritually connected to anything.
No.
So.
Maybe it's like a vibrations thing. Like maybe it's like a blind thing.
Yeah. But I was annoyed with Jinora's like thing when it first happened. I'm not so much anymore. Like, I sort of accept it now. But I think that the Korra vine thing, even when I was watching this episode this week, I was like, wait a minute, when did this happen? It was sort of just like, oh, this is a thing that she just knows how to do now. Like, it wasn't, yeah. it just sort of came out of nowhere and it happened. Like, that, this is it. This is what happens now. And then she started using it so much that I was like, oh, they really just needed to fill a plot hole, I think.
Okay. So... the actual plot of the episode, you know, Wu being kidnapped and then going onto the train and stuff like that, should Marco have gone to the bathroom with him if he was, like, employed as a bodyguard?
Yeah, probably.
Like, you know, was that Marco's, you know, fault, basically? Like,
I don't
know.
I always assume people will get kidnapped in the bathroom. I mean, maybe it's because, yeah. like, I'm a girl and we go in packs, but, like,
yeah,
maybe I watched Harry Potter too much.
Yeah, like, I know that, like, he hates his job, but he's still doing his job, so he should have done his job. But anyway, maybe he was, like, embarrassed to do it in front of Asami and something. So off Wu goes in the laundry. They conveniently find him on the train, and then they go onto the train and, you know, have a fight on top of the train and get him off. How did you feel about this whole sequence, basically, about them, you know, tracking him, getting him, and basically... you know, having that fight on top of the train. Any particularly favorite moments of that, or was it, like, too much drama?
No, it was good to see them back in action, and even them saying, like, hey, it's kind of like old times, you know? Like, let's hop in Asami's car, and we already, like, they kind of fell into their roles. Like, Asami knew that she would be driving, like, Mako knew that he would be doing the policing, and Korra knew that she would be there. So, you know.
I love you so much, Brittany. So much.
I'm going to be asked never to come back on this podcast.
I love you so much. I can't express it correctly.
I loved the whole scene. So yeah. I'm going to mute myself now for a little while.
No, it's so good. But I actually really like, I think everyone like kind of improved at their roles. Like, like Korra was really good at being there. No, but like Marco did a really good job. Like he was, you know, he got the guy. He was like, we have to keep going. Send that guy to the police station. Like he actually, you know, pulled in the kidnapper and stuff like that. And Asami was like dodging some mad cars. And it was like everyone kind of got good individually in the time off. So that's good.
Yeah. I'm surprised that they made us wait this long to get them back together, especially
since
they've been
episodes.
Gone. Yeah. It's like almost over the season. So, and we still don't have all four of them together. We still haven't seen all four of them together, have we? No, we haven't.
No,
oh, geez. It'll probably be the last episode.
Yeah. Bolin will
such a tease.
I mean, everyone gets a good moment. Like, Asami kicks someone in the face. Like, Korra's got some, you know, better airbending skills and all of that kind of stuff. And then they all jump off the train. So that's a bit of a scary moment, I suppose, if you fear falling from a train.
Well, I was thinking about it. I was like, the whole time they're up there, I'm like, why doesn't Korra just, like, airbend them all down? And then bubble, she finally did, and I was like, all right, we're good. But, I mean, I was thinking about it. I'm like, no, that should work. I'm, like, trying to figure out the logistics in my head. I'm like, no, I think that'll work best.
Yeah. And we also get the answer to, you know, what's been going on with the Marco Bolin family that they pulled out of Busing Se. They all live in Asami's big, giant old house, and they bring Prince Wu there for safety, and this is a great moment. Ariana, would you like to speak about that?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I'm just obsessed with Marco's Mexican grandma, who is obsessed with the earthbending royalty.
Yeah, she's fainting over Wu coming to the house to stay with them, and it's really cute and great, and I really like that. And I'm glad that we got a follow-up that the family is, like, there and that Marco hasn't, like, ditched them or something. Like, it's nice. And so Bolin and Varric, I mean, do any of you guys have anything else about the kind of Republic City plot in this episode that you wanted to talk about?
Now let's get to the real heroes of the story.
Okay, let's get to the next part, which is that Varric and Bolin are on the run from, you know, Kavera's army, going through the woods towards the checkpoint, like the giant wall of her, you know, kingdom, empire thing. And they meet, like, a bunch of rebels who have been in one of the re-education camps, the fire and water benders, because Kavera was purging all of the other towns of non-Earth citizens. Gotta love that word, purging. You know someone's a villain when they're doing some purging. So, yeah, they kind of relative.
So they really are, because I think last time we compared them to the Nazis, but they, like, actually are, like, the Nazis. They're killing people.
Yeah, it's like, and they have, it's the closest thing, like, to that right now, like, you know. You know, the Fire Nation is one thing. The Fire Nation was kind of like an oppressive war, but this is definitely, like, you've got your re-education camps, you've got your purging, like, we're getting into that territory. So they kind of make allies with that group fairly quickly, and, you know, after Bolin shows off his lava bending. And then they sort of go together to make a plot to get through the, you know, the checkpoint, and they would have got away if Varric hadn't decided to, you know, flash a smile at the guards and capture their attention, making them realize they're on the wanted posters. So that was a moment. But yeah, these guys, you know, they're on their way home. I know that you guys were, you know, a bit concerned in the last few episodes about, you know, why they'd stuck with Kavera so long. Like, at this point, like, do you feel like that they're, like, they have a responsibility to get back to the, you know, the side of the good and help there, but do you guys think these guys are sort of innocent of blame when it comes to Kavera stuff, or, like, do you think it's complete naivety from both of them, or do you think that, you know, either of them were kind of happy with what Kavera was doing, basically?
I mean, I think that they were happy with what Kavera was doing on a surface level because they didn't know what was going on otherwise. I mean, Varric, this is completely true to his character to be doing something that he doesn't realize he's doing.
Yeah.
And Bolin, kind of the same thing. So I don't necessarily blame both of them, but I also am kind of still upset that they didn't listen to anyone a little bit sooner. Like, Bolin could have listened to Opal and maybe done some investigating. But I think if he had Mako around, like, it would have been a different – he would have realized it faster. But since they left him on his own, ugh, what a disaster. But I loved, loved, loved Bolin and Varric, like, teaming up together. Mm. I thought it was so great.
And what I love about seeing them together is that – like, every time I watch it, I'm like, this is like a Slytherin and Gryffindor, like, interacting.
It's so good. And I love, and to Mitch's point here that, you know, Bolin's lava bending is officially overpowered. Like, come on. Those mech suits would overpower a lot of things. It's not just against Bolin, like, being put back in his place. That's how I'm reading this. So, stop.
He seems to have a problem with the boys. What's the opposite of internalized misogyny? Like, what is that for men?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Is maybe it misandry?
Yeah, it is. Maybe Mitch has internalized misandry. I don't know. But yeah, but he seems to have a problem with
lava
the boys.
Bending was like,
yeah, it is. Awesome. It's
misandry. Wow, we're gonna make some good friends with this episode. I can tell already. Yeah, the lava bending. How about that?
Oh, I love it. I love all bending, but I love watching Bolin bend because we're in book four and I forget that he's like a really good bender until he actually starts doing it. Every time Bolin starts bending, I'm like, yes, that's right. You're so good at living and being an earthbender. I think he's fantastic. He's slowly becoming my favorite character because Bumi has not been around. Although,
he was there for a second.
I know.
Do you guys think Bolin is a better earthbender than Marco is a firebender?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Well, yeah, Donya, because he can lava bend now. He, like, can do something nobody else can do now that the other guy is dead. He's, like, only lava bender.
Yeah, because I was kind of noticing Marco in the fight. And I'm like, firebending is, like, serviceable, but you're not, like, a magical great firebender.
I mean, he can't fly like Azula, so...
Yeah, I mean, so few can. But, yeah, so you think Bolin is a stronger bender? Like, if you're depending just on bending, Bolin is a stronger bender than Marco? Yeah?
I mean, if you think about the way that they went with part of the season where, like, he was trying to metal bend and he was frustrated and he couldn't do it, and... The thing is that was always Toph's thing, and she was the one who kind of pioneered that and almost became, like, the pinnacle of it as well. And the same is relevant for Bolin in regards to his lava bending. Like, he is almost at the pinnacle of being able to use that. And it's just... It's really remarkable because I think one of the episodes I was on, I can't remember who said it. It might have actually been Ariana on one of the episodes, like, way, way early on, where someone was complaining about them not doing anything or trying to do anything unique and different with their bending. They were just kind of going along with the flow and just doing, you know, what was expected of them and just doing, like, the ordinary stuff and not trying to do anything different with their powers. And Bolin is. He's kind of pushing himself, and there is no one else who can do what he's doing. So I will say this for the point in the dark of him being overpowered. He is as overpowered as Toph is when you look in regards to her metal bending. So it's the same sort of thing.
Yeah, it's just a human versus a non-human weapon, if you know what I mean. Like, at the end of the day, something non-human is going to be able to overpower most humans, regardless of anything. Yeah.
But even, like, because we had the clip episode next, and they did show, like, you know, we kind of revisited pro bending. I think even there, Bolin was a stronger bender. I mean, that was, like, the first time I've seen the pro bending again since we started this. But watching he's really good.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, but the firebending, like, looks flashy, so, yeah, like, exactly. Marco is the hero. Yeah, yeah. I think that, yeah, I've never thought about it that deeply before, but I think he is probably better than Marco, so.
Just in a different, they're different elements, but at the same time, I think that he's stronger.
Yeah.
Also, now that he has lava, he basically, like, is a firebender, too. He's, like,
he's, like, the perfect hybrid of Ben.
Yeah. I mean, he is, that actually makes perfect sense. Because his parents were an earthbender and a firebender.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if it is just an earth quality or if that only happens when it's, like, a, you know, crossbreed of elements, if you know what I mean. Like if you had, like, a water and a, I don't know, something else. Like if you had fire and, you know, air or something, if it could be... if you could do something special, like if these unique qualities come from kind of a mixing of genetics, or if it is just an aspect of one strain of bending or not. But anyway, Marco don't have any interesting mixed powers that we know of yet. So I don't know. Let's go on. Is there anything else about this episode you guys wanted to talk about? Just mentioned seeing some waterbending again. I was thinking about that as well, that, like, we haven't seen them straight up waterbending in a while, actually, because even when they're at the table in Republic City, like, the leaders in the episode, in the Wilds episode, I'm like, yeah, you got fire, you got air, you don't have any water anymore. So, yeah, anyone miss waterbending much, or are you not liking waterbending as much anymore?
No, I like waterbending.
I really like waterbending.
Yeah, same.
I'm meh on waterbending, so... Oh,
no, now we're going to be the anti-waterbending group.
Oh, no. I give up. I give up. I've been anti-everything, like, lately. I put a message on our Teen Wolf podcast Twitter last night about the Paris situation, and someone sent me a really abusive message about that, and I'm like, really? This is not what I was... Anyway, like, it was... I looked at their Twitter and they were clearly like a hate blog, that was literally doing terrible answers to everyone. But I put being like, you know, there's a lot of, you know, Teen Wolf community in Paris. You know, we've had a lot of great cons there, you know, hope all our listeners in Paris are okay tonight. And someone was like, oh, so what about all your, like, non-listeners? They can just go die then? Fuck you. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what I meant. But I went to their blog, and it was, like, just a spam hate blog. But I was just like, oh, my God, why is the internet so hard to please? Please. Anyway, let's carry on with the favourite scenes and favourite lines from this episode. And mine was, I didn't see that Brittany actually put it as her quote, but it was where Varric, like, mans up and, like, you know, and manages to convince the guards to let them through by yelling, you know, about convincingly yelling, you know, about why they didn't have the paperwork they needed. And I also love Marco, the grandma, Donya's one that she's going to talk about as well. But yeah, that was my favorite moment. And then Brittany can read out the full quote when we get to it.
Oh, mine was definitely Cora and Mako and Asami had their reunion in the little restaurant in the booth, and Mako was so grumpy, and perfect Asami finally, like, told Cora off. And but also shout out to Mako's backseat driving when they were chasing after the guy, and he's like, Asami, go over here, and she's like,
oh yeah,
fuck down.
I did that when she was like, I built these streets, I was the city planner. Yeah, I did like
I
that.
Love it when they bicker and fight. I think it makes me feel like they're real friends.
Okay, Brittany?
Mine was seeing Boomy for a hot second and knowing that Boomju's okay and that he lost, like, 100 pounds and looks great.
Yeah. How did you feel about seeing him in that?
Yes.
I forgot that he used to have that big belly, and now he's, like, wearing the spandex suit. That was interesting. Okay, and Donya, your favourite moment?
Is Marco's grandma basically being in love with the monarchy. I don't know if it reminds me more of, like, the kind of love that certain parts of Britain have for, like, the royal family here.
Yeah.
It's that kind of... If you've ever been over here and you go to, like, any, like, souvenir store, it's, like... all kind of like the queen.
I was there for the royal wedding.
Oh, okay.
Oh my god.
I was too. Wait, you were? I bought.
Yeah, I was studying abroad.
Castle. Me too.
Oh my gosh, what? Brittany.
I was studying abroad in Scotland, but I was in.
Oh, I was in London, but I went to Edinburgh.
Yeah, and I went to London for like a week and a half, and I bought a Will and Kate pencil because it's like I have to buy something, but I better.
They are like ships in the night.
Brittany,
it's like, just like the time we missed each other at LeakyCon.
I know.
Oh my god, this is so crazy.
Wait, you were both at LeakyCon. Which LeakyCon?
The 2012?
No!
Yeah, all four of us.
The one in Portland. Or no, maybe it was 13.
It was later.
It was later.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was at the 2012 one in Chicago.
Yeah, so was I, and I didn't meet Donya.
No, exactly.
I did meet Brooke and Courtney there. Like, I already knew them, and then we met up there, but I did not meet Donya there. Or maybe
which is so weird, because I was hanging out with Brooke and Courtney all weekend.
Maybe you were. I don't know. Donya, were you there before the ball when Brittany was making, like, drinks in the, like, not you, Brittany, another Brittany, was making drinks, like, in the lobby of the floor, like, the lift lobby?
No, I don't think I was. Okay. I think I was still coming down with other people at that point.
Okay, I don't know. Anyway, never mind, moving on. I have two Will and Kate mugs and Will and Kate saucers, like, plates. They were kind of a joke. It was, like, ironic, but also, like, it was, like, 75% ironic and, like, 25% I genuinely care about.
I really wanted the Will and Kate, like, oven mitts that I saw. But I was like, that's going to take a lot from my suitcase.
I'm gonna be Marco's grandma when I'm a grandma. Like, I'm really emotional about the royal family. Or about royalty in general. But, like, about, like, in kind of, like, the history of it and, like, what it means. And, like, I have a lot of, like, very complex emotions about, the royal family and, like, how that plays into, like, the history of countries and stuff like that. So, I will be Marco's grandma, probably. But anyway, yeah, let's move on. Favorite quotes. Mine was when they're walking along at the beginning and, you know, they get in the trap after Bolin and Varric were carrying each other, which is, like, what? And Bolin's like, I wish Pabu was here. He could free us by chewing us out. And Varric goes, you know who else has incisors sharp as a knife? Julie. Because, you know.
They're so going to get together.
Oh, my God. I ship them so hard.
I know. It better happen soon. And she better be, like, an inside spy.
Oh,
like,
she's,
you know,
definitely.
Down from the, yeah, without a doubt.
But what do you think it would take for, you know, her to, you know, she clearly has a problem with their, like, inequality, you know, like, their, like, whole dynamic of him yelling at her.
It would just be Varric looking at her being like, you matter, and that's the end of it. They're together forever.
I mean, yeah, he needs to do something like he did with Bolin, where he was like, you know what, I'll carry you now. Like,
yeah,
to show that they're a little bit equal. But I think that she's an inside man because she's too smart. I mean, she's been kissing ass for, like, ever, so she knows how to do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's a survivor.
Mm. Okay, well, that was my favorite line. Ariana, how about you?
Mine was when Asami was like, it was just like old times, except for the getting on each other's nerves part. And then Mako goes, actually, that is just like old times for me and Korra.
It's so terrible.
True.
All right, Brittany?
Mine is when Varric channels his inner Boomy and makes up this story about why they don't have their paperwork. And he says to the guard, listen, pal, I had to fight off 2 badger moles, 6 wolf bats, and 18 hog monkeys to get these guys. So sorry if I don't have the paperwork. I was too busy cramming it in a hog monkey's mouth while it was trying to eat me.
So good. So good. All right. And Donya, how about you?
Mine is when they finally free Wu, and Wu kind of comes back to consciousness. He's like, Marco, where am I? Am I dead? And Marco is just like, no, you're on a train.
I almost picked the one where they were like, where Kuro's like, have you seen Prince Wu? And they're like, no, I haven't seen him. And he pops up and he's like, yeah, I'm in laundry.
Yes.
I really love him. He's the worst, but
I'm really surprised he's stuck around as long as he has.
I know.
And I mean, I'm not complaining. I think he's great, but I'm just surprised he's still around.
I love him. So, yeah, that was the first episode. The second episode, chapter 8, is called Remembrances, and it's basically a clip show episode summarizing the events from different perspectives.
Better than the actual other 3 seasons.
Oh, that's so good.
It's a summary of, like, different aspects. And so I'm going to talk very quickly about, initially we were going to skim over this really fast, but now we've decided to talk a little bit about some of the original content of it and why we enjoyed watching it as well. So just to summarize very quickly, there were kind of 3 flashbacks, one told by Marco that was all about the romance, like, basically him and Korra and him and Asami and him and Korra and, like, all of that. And then there was one told kind of by Korra, like, Korra and Asami talking about
the
villains that have happened to her and, like, all of the ways she's failed and stuff. And then Tenzin at the end's like, but you did all this good stuff. This good stuff came of it too. And then the third one was Bolin and Varric. They're on the boat coming back to Republic City with their, you know, their new refugee friends, or whatever you want to call them, escaped camp people friends. And they, you know, and it's Varric giving a flashback of basically Bolin's life and how he's become a hero, told, you know, in the way that he'd tell it as a nuptuck mover, which was not strictly very truthful. And so that all of those are used as, you know, in different clips, slightly different storytelling formats, you know, the Varric one is obviously very nonsensical. The Marco one's really cute. It has like chibi, like talking heads where they kind of interrupt each other telling the story. Like it's him and Wu and then his cousin and his grandma, and it's really cute. and then the Korra one is like kind of the most serious one about all of the villains and stuff. So first of all, like which of the three flashbacks did you like the best, basically? So let's go down. Ariana, Brittany, Donya, like which of the three flashback bits did you like the best?
My favorite was probably the Mako one, just because now I'm obsessed with Mako, and I just thought it was hilarious how everyone was like criticizing him the same way that we have, and they're like, yeah. They're like, that was pretty rude.
Yeah.
Kind of rude there, buddy.
And so let's talk about that one for a moment, just because, yeah, like seeing it all like laid out in perspective, like so this happened and then this happened and then this happened, and actually seeing like the back and forth of all the relationships. Yeah, like what's your guys' opinion on it now on like on the different, like I guess the different shipping or the way that Marco handled like dating those two girls, you know, now that we've sort of seen it like very concisely summarized rather than like kind of forgetting aspects of it because it happens like a year later or whatever.
He was being such a hormonal teenage boy, basically. I forgive him now. Now he's a man.
Yeah, he wouldn't do any of that anymore.
Yeah, it was like kind of echoing all of our thoughts as we went along. Like when he's like, so that was you breaking up with her? And we're like, what was that, Mako? Like, and sort of like, and as Mako's saying it, he's like, yeah, probably could have handled that a little bit better.
Yeah.
I love his naughty Mako.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the cousin being like, so you were trying not to disappoint anyone, but you ended up disappointing everyone and stuff like that. I don't know. I loved it. And I love the chibi talking heads. And I thought it was really, really fun. So Brittany, how about you?
I mean, do you have to ask me what my favorite one is?
Yours was Varric.
Yes. I thought it was brilliant. And I loved how it kept switching between like Nuntuck and Bolin, and then like because he's getting confused, and then Bolin's like he's not into it at all, but then all of a sudden when he's like, oh, and you and Opal get back together, and he's like, yes, tell me more, and then like, you know, there's this it's so like a Legion of Doom,
like, I love how Unalaq, nobody wants Unalaq on their team, and that's like that's just like the fandom, we hate Unalaq.
And he's just like, guys, I'm still here. I thought that was so funny, but I will say that my second favorite one was definitely the Korra and Asami one, because I think that this episode did so much to like make me realize like what is wrong, why I don't like Korra. Like that whole scene.
Keep digging that hole, Brittany.
Yeah, it's like I don't care at this point because I'm already like 6 feet under.
Are you on the next team? Like, are you staying with the show after we finish Korra?
I think so.
I hope that you are. Like,
well, I might be voted out by.
I might be voted out.
Twitter, so I won't be watching the show, but I'll run the Twitter.
Sorry. Carry on.
So I really liked it because it pointed out everything that I don't like about Korra, but also gave it a little bit more context from things, I guess, that I've been ignoring the whole time. Like, so Korra's been feeling like this, and I haven't given it that much consideration because she just constantly feels like a failure, even though there is a little bit of, like, you know, there is some success from what she's doing, and I'm not saying that – I never said that there wasn't. It just wasn't the type of success that I wanted to see from Korra. I wanted her to see her taking more responsibility and not just, like, being like, oh, yes, there was some good that came out of the spirit world, but why did you, like, pass that duty off as soon as it happened? Like, what is the problem there? Like, that's part of your job. Like, I still don't see her taking responsibility for the things that the Avatar is supposed to be doing, but I kind of understand why she's being – brought down so much personally as herself. Like, you know, she's tearing herself down constantly and she needs to kind of get over that a little bit and sort of accept that people are realizing that she is a good person and is helping people. And like Tenzin said, like, she grew up, you know, she's not as selfish as she was when she first started. And Cora realizes that she was like a hothead when she started coming into this. So I appreciated that storyline a lot more than I thought I would when Asami and Cora popped up and I'm like, oh, this is going to be a segment. Great. But I actually enjoyed it a lot more than I was expecting to. And I kind of get Cora a little bit more. Very tiny bit.
Congratulations.
Anyway, the best.
Donya, which of the three did you like the best?
Marco's one. I think Marco's one is still my favorite. Yeah, no, it was just, I like the little talking heads thing when they keep popping up and jumping around all over the place. I just really like that. I thought it was really successful, really funny. Especially because they had, like, zero choice about doing a clip show.
Yeah. What about, like, the original content, I guess, like, of the, you know, the very small amounts of, like, scene setting, like, you know, of, you know, Marco trying to, you know, help Wu, like, you know, like, teach him to fight and stuff like that. how do you think that's gonna go?
I really like that. Like, it just...
It's gonna save them in the end.
Oh my god, I'm just imagining. I always really enjoyed this episode even before I understood why it was happening, because I thought it was a really good way of doing a clips episode, because
it's good for a clips episode. It's very good for a clip show. And they kind of managed to make it a little bit different, like the different storytelling. You know, the Varric one, like, you know, completely ridiculous. The Varric one, because kind of they put the most effort into, like, you know, changing stuff and, like, painting things in, like Chinora with the butterfly wings and, like, all of that.
Like, the fake high five with the paws was still there, which is hands down my favorite moment.
Oh, the nut duck. So bad. Oh my god. Yeah, and then, you know, him becoming the giant Cora and everything, and the telephone call, which is like the best. The telephone call is maybe the best moment of all of Legend of Korra, because it's so tongue-in-cheek and it's so funny. But anyway, so originally Mitch didn't allow us space to put in our favourite scenes and quotes, but we've done it anyway. Donya, I'm not sure if you've got a specific one.
No, I don't.
I think Ariana just forced this in here when she got into the doc. So,
I was like, it's my favourite episode, we have to.
Okay, well, yeah, do you want to talk about that, your favourite scenes and favourite quotes?
Yeah, my favorite scene was just, like, Marco getting, like, totally, owned by everyone in his family. And I was like, oh, Marco, I love you.
Brittany?
Mine was the phone call between the evil square, the fearsome foursome, whatever you want to call them.
Oh, it's so funny. Especially Unalaq. I died. Like, it's like, it's so funny. Mine was the bit where they're on the boat and Varric sings, and then Bolin's like, there's not any singing. And then and the guys are like, when are you going to sing? And it's like, there's no singing. They're like, boo! And I was like, same. But Brittany, you said online that this is like how you do Wonderful recaps. Like, explain.
Okay, so Jen hasn't been able to host Wonderful because she's studying for an exam. So I've been hosting Wonderful, or I started to in the beginning of Wonderful this season. And Karen used to make fun of me because when I would give the synopsis as we're going along in Wonderful, I would kind of like change up the language of the synopsis, and I'd be like, you know, I would, she says I like ghettoized everyone. So my plot lines were like really, really funny, and like not, you know, like I would be, I don't even know how to explain it. But the phone call scene just reminded me of how I would retell a story, because I'd make up the way that like these people would communicate to one another.
And, okay, yeah, and he was like, you know,
exactly. How I told this, like retold the scenes of every episode.
I love that so much. Yeah,
that's what the comment was about.
Oh, good. Exciting. I love that. So, favorite specific quotes. Ariana, you actually stole mine because it's amazing.
So it's in, like, Mako is fighting Wu and he like keeps falling, and Mako is like, dude, like, get up. And he's like, it's not my fault I was born this way. I'm not like you, Mako. I was raised by a pack of cops in the woods.
I love him. Oh my god, today's gonna be real long, isn't it? We're about to podcast for another 2 hours together after this, everyone, and I foresee hysterics, and I foresee Marima firing us all, but yeah. Okay, alright. Brittany?
Mine was when Zahir calls Fatu and is like, glad I caught you at home, and Fatu's like, oh, very funny, like, I can leave. And then when, like, the animated, like, the little phone coming up.
Oh my god!
So funny.
So good. mine was just when they were on the boat and sort of Bolin starts telling his story and, you know, making it sound really negative, and Varric just stops him and is like, you're emphasizing the wrong story notes again. And I was like, same, because I've been thinking a lot this week about, like, storytelling, but this is in preparation for the hype episode, but about storytelling and in, like, what parts of a story, like, need to make it into an adaptation and what don't and stuff. And it just, I was just like, God, you're speaking the thing I've been reading all week, and I just found it hilarious for some reason. So, yeah. Donya, off the top of your head, any favourite moments?
No, you've kind of covered them all. Like, the lines that the pack of cops in the woods one would have probably been what I would have chosen.
So good. They need an Emmy for that.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Oh my gosh. Mako, I also love Mako's other line where he's like, hey, when you got charm like mine, you don't need introductions.
But are you guys, like, for the newbies, because I'm pretty sure Natalie would know why they had to do this episode, but are you aware of the reason why this episode had to be done?
Yeah, because they ran out of money, didn't they?
No, they didn't run out of...
Their budget got cut.
Yeah, so Nickelodeon basically turned around and were like, that's it, you lose about an episode's worth of budget, we're just cutting it. And their choices were let go of a load of crew members a couple of weeks before the end of the show, or make a clips episode. So...
And they did it very well, I think. All right, anything about the clips before we move on to the final episode? Anything more about this episode? I'm really glad we're doing these three together. It was something I think I suggested to Karen quite a while back, and then Caitlin came up with the same idea independently of me, instead of doing the finale as three, doing these three as three, because number one, I really wanted to do this episode, and I really wanted to do the next one, Beyond the Wilds, in the same episode, because they're two very good episodes, my favourites. Like, I was like really glad that I was able to that I personally was able to be on this week. But yeah, I just think that it makes sense to do this one, especially directly after the reunion, and I think it's a really good way that we've done it. So yeah. So chapter 9, Beyond the Wilds. This is one of my favourite episodes of all of Korra, maybe my favourite episode of this season. Because obviously of my boyfriend Zahir being in it and being wonderful. And I love him so much.
It's like a crazy mountain man in this episode.
I love him. Like,
I'm
want him
obsessed
in Korra.
With him.
I love him.
His hair grew really quickly.
It's been three years.
I forgot.
But, like, not even in, like, oh, you know, I love to hate him. I genuinely think he's kind of a good person, and I kind of want Korra to, like...
He's definitely, like, better than Kuvira. Kuvira sucks. Yeah. Like, Kuvira just wants to be ruler of the world. He wanted to, like, bring peace in a weird, twisted way.
He had a delusional way. He was an activist, and he had delusions about the way that was, you know, the ways that were best for humanity. But he has, in a way, a good heart, if you know what I mean. And I kind of want, like, him to be, like, Korra's, like, spiritual advisor, like, for the rest of her life. Like, I'm not even joking. Like, I want them to, like, be friends. So, yeah, I really love this episode. So, So, Chapter 9, Beyond the Wilds. In this chapter, everything changes when everything attacks. Korra visits Zaheer to save the trapped tourist from the spirit world because the memory of him is blocking Korra from meditating because she's still haunted by him. But he helps Korra because much as he doesn't like Korra, he also doesn't like a world leader like Kavira even more. Meanwhile, Asami and Varric team up to create a defense against Kavira's spirit vine energy attacks because the reason the vines are acting up in Republic City in the first place is because Kavira is harvesting Toph's swampy home, who we can only hope will join her Bacon in the fight to take back Zaufu. Oh yeah, and Zuko's daughter is unjustly sexy, donning her tiny glasses and bitch don't fuck with me chewed. Questions, anyone? So yeah, that's all very true. We have, yeah, you get to see Fire Lord Azumi here. She has some strong opinions about things. And, you know, Bolin and Varric come back and almost get arrested. And, yeah, a bunch of people get stuck in some gooey pods, which is really, really gross. So, yeah, episode kind of opens with our favourite slacker, Ryu, taking a, you know, tour group in the spirit worlds. Because apparently that's what you do if you're an airbender. You just become, like... Like, I'm like, I don't understand why that's his job, if you know what I mean, but apparently it is. He's
too useless to do anything else, so they're like, be a tour guide.
Yeah. Well, that's his job, and him and his team get captured, him and his group get captured by this vine, and then so does Jenora, basically. And, yeah, and then Korra has to basically figure out a way to save them, even though she isn't really wanted. Like, she has to convince everyone that she has the capability to actually serve in these kind of situations. So that's kind of the big challenge for her, and she pretty much fails until she goes to Zaheer. So some of the questions that we've got here, did it feel like Marco was trying to win back Korra in these two episodes? Like, I'm here for you, what do you need? I mean, no, I didn't get that vibe at all. I don't know where that's coming from. Is anyone else seeing that?
I actually didn't either. Yeah, I mean, now that I'm obsessed with Marco,
you
would have
noticed.
I would have noticed, yeah. But
yeah, I don't think so either. I do have a question about the opening, though, like with the spirit vines. Are they taking people to get Korra's attention? Like, that something's going on in the spirit world? Like, I didn't understand why the spirits...
I don't know. That's
or are they just,
good...
like, trying to rebel? Because wouldn't they be... I know we saw them kind of rebelling against Kavira's, like, you know, mecha suit guys, but they seem to be... I don't understand why they're rebelling so far away.
That's a very good point. Probably, honestly, yeah, probably. It's like, hey, we need to do something so that you figure out what's going on. Like, we're going to do this, then you're going to come and see what's going on. That could be very accurate. I've never thought about that, but yeah, possibly. Okay, so
I really liked the way that Mako and Korra were interacting this episode. I like it. I think they have a very, to me, him and Korra and Bolin have a very like brother sisterly kind of thing going on now.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate
they've found their balance and it's all
yes,
good.
They're like family. They go way back. So
yeah. So, Korra basically tries a bunch of things to, like, try and see if she can help, and she can't. So she ends up deciding that she can't, you know, meditate. She can't go into the spirit world, basically, to see where the people have gone. And so she eventually asks to face Zaheer to get over the block that she thinks he's put on her, basically.
Which
and, you
really
know, her,
smart, I think.
It's a good, you know... That's the same thing as good old Baxter in Downton Abbey, isn't it? You know, like, you know, that's what she's having going on at the moment with her, you know, scary prison man. So, yeah, that's something that Korra feels the need to do, that, you know, she's alive, she's survived, she needs to know that Zaheer isn't coming after her. And she goes to visit him in prison with Marco, and then she goes in by herself. And I love this story where he, you know, she goes in, and he's like, he is about, you know, it shows that he's not Korra's enemy. Like, he is, I mean, he is kind of, he had this idea that involved, you know, some very bad things.
Like killing her.
Yeah, like killing her. But he is, you know, he respects her power. He has no personal problem with her, and he's not vendetta like, I'm not going to help you. He hears that what he did, you know, has given rise to something even worse than anything he would ever believe in, which is Kavira. Which is Kavira. And as soon as he hears that, he's like, fuck, okay, we got to fix this. And so he becomes like Korra's ally, and basically he's like, I can help you. I can take you into the spirit world. I can help you get past this block. And he goes through the experience, you know, he goes through the experience with her, you know, and even though it's the experience he did to her, he's like, he still serves as kind of this therapist and this guide, you know, being like, you know, just let it play out. It happened. You're here. You're safe. Just go through it. Even though, like, so first question, like, is like, yeah, how do you feel about him doing that? Like, even though, like, when we're watching, like, that it was him that was the one that was initially attacking her, like, how does that work for you guys? I love it, but maybe it would be really bad for other people. Maybe other people are like, where does he get off, if you know what I mean? Like, Brittany or Ariana, did either of you have like strong feelings about, like, you know, the whole Zahir as the spiritual guide thing?
I personally didn't. I liked that she went to him because I think she needed someone who would be, like, you know, firm with her, but also, like, in a, not in a position to be friendly. Like, you know, like, this is doing what Toph tried to do. Like, Toph was like, listen, like, all of these things happened and you still didn't learn anything from it. And I think that Zahir is finally the one to push her far enough to be like, yes, all of these things happened and you need to accept that they happened. Like, you need to accept that you failed, like, and not worry about what that means. Like, you have to realize that, yeah, you did almost, like, die when we fought, and that's okay. But in order to get over it, you need to, like, remember the full experience of what happened and take that, internalize it, and then you can move on. But since she was with Toph, she was more like, oh, we can be buddies, and that wasn't the case. Like, with Zahir, she's not looking to, like, become friends with him or look to him for guidance in the future. She just really wants to get over this one thing with him, and I think that he was the perfect person to make that happen. Everyone else kind of, except for Toph, kind of tiptoes around Korra, and she needed someone who wouldn't tiptoe around her.
Yeah. Ariana, how about you? How do you feel about him at this point? Like, would have you taken the advice from him if he had tried to kill you?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. It made me remember how cool Zahir was, though. And just, like, the whole Red Lotus. I just really love them as villains compared to Kavira, who I don't understand why some people on this podcast love her so much. She sucks, and I hate her. And, yeah, because at least this guy, he was like an idealist, you know? He thought he was doing the right thing. But I think what I really enjoyed about this scenario is that I know that we kind of like shit on Korra a lot, especially, I mean, I know I have definitely in the past, maybe not as much as Brittany, but, I really respect new short hair Korra and how she doesn't go for the fighting right away. And she, you know, like Mako wanted to like burn down the things and get Janora and the people out. And she was like, you know, let's meditate first, because, you know, when I tend to go fighting things, bad stuff happens. So I appreciate that she took this kind of meditating attitude and listened to Zahir and faced her problems in a different way.
I don't know. It just blew me away the first time I saw it for some reason. I was just like, far out. This is epic. Like, this is just so, he's just such a great character to me. And yeah, I think it was exactly what was needed, and it was quite an unexpected thing to do. You know, you don't usually see, you know, people, you know, getting the help, you know, from that kind of source. And you know, that it's just, I think he's just a really well done character. Like, that, you know, it really shows that he's not, like, you know, he's not vindictive, he's not selfish, he's not, you know, that he has the, you know, that he wants good, you know, what he thinks is good things for the world, I guess. And I mean, you'd say all villains think, or no villains think that they're the bad guy. Like, that's what makes them villain, if you know what I mean. But sometimes they're, you know, the things that make them believe they're right are, like, quite selfishly based. And I don't know, I just really loved it, and I just was, yeah, really into it. And I just loved I can't, almost like the audacity of him being like, you know, just live through it, just go past it, it's over, it's done, like, even though he was the one that kind of did it, if you know what I mean. And I don't know, I think that he could be a really good ally, like, for the future, like, but, you know, probably he won't ever be let out of the prison, but I feel like he could be, like, Cora's therapist that she, like, goes and, like, sits across the room and, like, hangs out with and bitches at, basically, and I think that that would be a really good help for her. So, yeah. Now, you know, the other parts of the episode besides from Zaheer, obviously, was, you know, the meeting of the world leaders, you know, with Azumi, with Tenzin, the president, whatever the hell his name is, and Prince Wu, basically. And but they, this is before she goes to see Zaheer. They go in and they're like, guys, something's going on with spirit vines and stuff. And everyone kind of, it's the big reunion of not only do, you know, we see all of those world leaders, Marco and Cora, come to them, and then Bolin and Varric come in the same meeting. Cora's really pissed that they've invited Wu and not her, that they're trying to, you know, solve these problems, talk, have counsel about Kuvira without Cora there. So do you guys think that she kind of was right to be angry? Like, is she a world leader? Like, is she, should she be sitting in on a meeting like that? Or, you know, are the excuses that they gave about, like, her maybe not being ready, you know, okay? You know, is that fair enough? Or is it just more like her personality isn't exactly world leader material?
No. How much? They should have definitely invited her because, okay, it bugs me that they're like, never mind, Cora. Like, they don't let her do anything or be involved in any decision-making until the end. They're like, actually, can you please, like, go into your avatar state and fix everything for us, please?
Yeah.
So, yeah, and they didn't even, like, check in with her. Like, you know what I mean? They weren't like, how are you doing? Like, you know, like, all right, do you think you can sit in on this, like, important meeting? And if she said no, then she said no. Like, I mean, she would have never said no. But, also, like, they didn't even care.
Yeah, also if they had maybe treated her like this, like you would treat someone who's like maybe in a monarchy or something, you know, since she was young and getting her involved in these kind of decisions, she probably wouldn't be as hot-headed as she is now. You know, she'd probably have a better understanding of the way that the world works. So,
yeah. And I mean, to be fair, they did invite Wu to that meeting with his fantastic ideas about, you know, tricking Kuvira into winning an all-expenses-paid trip to a tropical island. So, yeah, I would be offended if I saw that Wu was considered a member of the council, but I was not, and I was the Avatar, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, do we know if Kuvira has any allergies? Okay, guys. So, yeah, like, that happened, and then we have that kind of very rational conversation, you know, with Azumi and Raiko and Tenzin about, you know, defending or attacking and all of that kind of stuff. But Tenzin's like, please, Cora, it's not personal. I mean, it is obviously personal. It's like, it's not personal. We just thought that you suck. Like, not personal. And so, yeah, I don't know about that.
But that's like the definition of personal, Tenzin.
Yeah. Oh, God. And so, basically, you know, that they're about to, you know, talk about that, and then Bolin and Varric come back to the meeting and are, you know, immediately kind of arrested for being Kuvira supporters because they're still in their Kuvira uniforms, but they kind of get out pretty quickly that they've, you know, figured out what Kavira's doing, rebelled and run away, and they've got the information for them about the, you know, the spirit vines, and that it all comes together. Like, Cora figures out why they're harvesting spirit vines. It's because of this weapon and blah de blah de blah. So all the pieces of what Kuvira has in plan are now sort of vaguely known by the good guys, which is a good thing, I think. So that's good. But, yeah, the world leaders that we met, I mean, okay, so we kind of know why they didn't invite Cora and why that was wrong, but, like, why did they invite Wu? Do you think he just, like, demanded it? Or, like, is it just his, you know, they couldn't not, like, he had the royal right, like, regardless of whether he was any good or not?
I mean, I think they need somebody that the Air Nation, that the Earth Nation might be able to get behind. You know, I mean, they can't just go, like, because otherwise they'll be like the Fire Nation, you know what I mean? Like, they'll just be going in and destroying.
They do need a figurehead. They need to be like, this is the guy that's meant to be, you know, in charge or whatever.
Yeah. Otherwise it'll just be an Earth Nation takeover.
Yeah, that's true. And then you got to meet Izumi properly, I guess, like, so it was something, you know, something of her. So how did you guys feel about seeing her, in action and what she wanted for the Fire Nation? Like, she didn't want to make the Fire Nation, you know, even more of a, you know, go into more wars by attacking, but she was happy to help defend the city for when Kavira came. So that's kind of the tact that the Fire Nation has been building up for themselves, you know, since that they've got a bad reputation because of the, you know, Hundred Years' War. Yeah, do you guys like her?
I want to see the Fire Nation.
I know. Why have we not been there yet?
Like, this is ridiculous.
I'm so frustrated. They were so... I mean, obviously, Fire Nation is, like, the sexiest people.
Yeah.
So I don't know why we aren't visiting there. Sorry. But yeah, it was great to see her. I loved her cute little glasses.
Mm, yeah. So she's Zuko's daughter. And then I guess that...
But we don't know who her mama is.
We don't know who her mother is.
No, we still don't know. It's supposed to apparently be revealed in one of the upcoming comics.
Who do you guys think it is? Do you think it's May?
Ugh, I hope not.
Rude! I don't know. Wow. I don't know who her mother, you know, who knows what happens.
Why
to Zuko?
Are mothers such a big mystery in the Fire Nation?
Oh, I don't know. Who knows? I mean, I'm presuming she had one, you know, like, you know, that, you know, Zuko had a wife.
It was
and stuff.
It was an egg donation from Katara.
Yeah.
No, in all seriousness, no, though, they are finishing off the Last Airbender comics. And it is going to be revealed in one of them. They did announce that, so...
What, like, the Zuko's wedding and whoever he was with or whatever?
Yeah.
Are they going to tell us who the daddies of Lin and...
One of them is kind of known. It's not anyone famous or anything like that. Like, at one point, you know, Toph was just like, some guy called whatever. He was nice. It didn't work out. Like, he was literally... And then the other one is unknown, I think.
Yeah.
It's probably Sokka.
It is totally Sokka.
You weren't wrong when you said we would be talking about the sex lives of cartoons for 2 hours, Ariana, today. Okay, let's carry on. So she's there. So Bolin and Varric, they come back. They don't open with the best sentence, but they pretty much quickly, you know, tell everyone what's going on. So everyone's on the same team again, kind of. Asami and Varric are kind of tasked to work together again to build something, you know, to fight the big giant spirit vine super weapon laser. So you kind of seen a bit of what that can do. What do you think that they're going to be able to build to defend against that or fight against it? How would you do that? Like, would you make an even bigger laser? Would you make like some little things that could like, you know, go inside? Like, would you do something like Ant-Man style, like internal damage? Or like, you know, how would you go about fighting something like that? Would you just kill Kavira?
Well, that'll work, but other people know how to make the laser. I think that they would have to, like, you know how like Varric made that thing, or like, you know, manipulated that thing to like overpower the mecha suits? I think he would have to like find some way to like, you know, like cancel out the power, like make the opposite of it, and then they just cancel each other out, sort of like, you know, a Voldemort Harry Potter battle where they like shoot the lasers at each other and then eventually one wins.
Fair enough. Donya, any idea? Well, I mean, you obviously know what plays out, but if you were at this stage, what would you do to attack or to defend?
I don't know. I kind of same kind of thing, really. I mean, it's sort of really difficult to kind of fight against giant spirit vine lasers.
Yes, yeah. I don't think they should fight against them at all. I think what Varric needs to do is go profess his love to Julie, and then everything will be
and
fixed.
And then she will save the day.
Yes.
Julie will fix everything.
Yeah. Yes, so that's a plan. Okay, so do you think that Varric is, like, he's learned his lesson, or do you think he's still going to make sort of selfish choices from here on out?
No, I don't think Varric his only selfish choice is that he works for whoever's going to pay him. So mm-hmm. if but he's working for these people now...
Yeah, but do you think he's above that now? Like, do you think he's kind of like, this is good, they're bad, I'm not going to double-cross no matter how much I'm getting paid, if you know what I mean?
I mean, probably, because, you know, he wants to defeat everyone who betrayed him, including Julie, so... unless,
he's been burned real bad.
Yeah, unless he, like, shows up and she's just like, come fight with me, and he's like, okay, totally.
Yeah. she holds the key.
That would be the only thing, I think, at this point that would make him switch sides.
I'm so sad I didn't get to be on the last episode, because I really wanted my favorite line to be when he's like, what does he say? He goes, that guy pulled a Varric because that girl Julie'd him. When he was going to kill himself.
And like, yeah, I know. I love how he makes her the phrasing for everything, like, you know, like the weight measurements and all of that kind of stuff. Like, it's so weird. he's so good. The swamp's getting attacked. It's getting completely butchered by Kavira. They're cutting down the tree and all of the, you know, the vines, the source is there. Toph's not doing anything about it. Why?
She's just mad that people are waking her up before noon with their giant chainsaws.
we've already said she's not very spiritual. Like, do you think that, like, using the spiritual vines is just convenient for her? And she's like, meh, about them, like, you know, or do you think she doesn't know about it or, like, or what?
I think as soon as she was disturbed, she just packed up and left.
Hmm.
I don't know how much she cares.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah, she's also, quite I'm not self-serving.
Sure. Yes, and she's very smart, too. I mean, as cool as Toph is, I don't think she can fight, like, an entire army single-handedly.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, the Beifongs, you know, like, Lin and Opal are going to go to, you know, Zhaofu to save their family from Kavira, along with Bolin, who's trying to suck up to Opal. So... are you guys looking forward to that confrontation?
Yes.
Like, the whole fight, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is where I think they're definitely going to meet up with Toph again. I mean, if Lin has any brains, she'll go and pick up Toph on the way.
Yeah, so and they'll all go and fight.
Yes, mm-hmm. And it's exciting. I love seeing the Beifong family.
They're sexier than the Fire Nation. I mean, they're just one family. But, like,
what? The Earth Nation really stepped up their game in Korra.
They did. Oh, yeah. They did. They were pretty lame in Avatar.
Except for King Bumi, other than them, you know.
Other than he was always good. In Korra, the Earth Nation were, like, it was, like, Korra's version of the sexy Fire Nation, like, for sure. Which is nice to have it highlighted, because they were kind of like the Hufflepuffs of Atlas. So, like, you know. Well, not in a bad way, just in an understated way. And now they're getting to shine, you know.
Yeah, this is like their Fantastic Beasts, so.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We're so cool. All right. So basically that is... what happened, and Opal is kind of pissed the whole time, because she's like, no one's doing anything, save my family, what the hell, and then they go, they appeal to, you know, the president, you know, or whoever is in charge, you know, to go and do something about it, and they're like, yeah, no, we can't do that right now, so Lin and Opal, like, are basically doing an unsanctioned private mission, which is good, but yeah, should have they, you know... had some official help in this? Like, you know, why were they not doing anything about it?
I don't know, because they don't care. I also found it interesting that Lin was like, no, nobody's going to help us. We're going to have to do this by ourselves, which I thought was really unfair, considering that when everybody else's family is in trouble, Lin is, like, the first one to step up and help out.
Yeah. Like, she's helped save Tenzin's kids, like, four
like,
down.
All the time. She helped save his girlfriend that he left her for, like, all the time, so...
Oh, God. Yeah. True. Okay, hang on a second. Why is this not working? Sorry. Okay, so we've got our favourite scenes, favourite lines from this episode that we'll do quickly. Why is this not control-effing for me? All right, that's better. Okay, so my favorite quote from the episode was actually probably Zaheer, who's shocked when he says, blaming me is a crutch to make you feel better, but it's not helping you recover. And I was just like, yes, slay. You're so good. I love you. But there was a lot of funny quotes, like at the very beginning when the guy was like, why is that spirit vine coming towards us? I'm going to poke it with a stick. And Ryu's like, why would you do that? I was just like, that was very funny to me. And Opal being like, I'm sorry you had to see that, Pabu, when she yells at Bolin. So, yeah, good funny moments, but I loved the whole Zaheer thing. So, yeah, favorite scene. Oh, I did my quote first. I did it in the wrong order. I'm sorry. Favorite scene was the Zaheer meditation. Sorry about that, if that wasn't obvious. So that was my favorite scene, and the quote was from that. Sorry, favorite scenes, Ariana, Brittany, Donya.
My favorite scene was definitely when we had the three gang babies in the same room, just like kicking it world leader style. I love that Lynn got to be in there, even though she's not technically a world leader. They're like, you know what? You're basically like gang royalty, so you can come too. But not Korra.
Yeah, and mine was when Zaheer was the one to finally like wake up Korra and be like, hey, this is what you have to face. So I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
For me, it was basically Ryu being the tour guide and his mom being like hovering in the background. I just thought that was really funny, and just the whole tour group. I just thought it was really funny.
Cool. Favorite quotes. I already said mine because I mixed up the order. Sorry about that. So you guys, go ahead down the list.
Oh yeah. So mine was in my favorite scene where Korra shows up. And he's like, oh, hey, Korra, we're just kicking it, world leader style. For the record, I told Raiko he should have invited you. Which...
Thanks.
Yeah, I thought you were going to keep going with you invited him, but not me.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Says, you invited him, but not me.
So mine was from Azumi because, you know, it's basically the first line she ever spoke. And she goes, the Fire Nation has spent too much of its history fighting nonsense wars, and I refuse to drag my nation into another one unless there's no other choice. And I just appreciated her sticking to her guns and not being too, like, quick to act, but also offering help, like, you know, in another way that doesn't bring her country directly into war.
She was like, I'll defend you against, mm-hmm. I'll help defend against people who are attacking you, but I'm not going to be the one to strike, you know, first.
Yeah. So I liked that.
Cool. And Sonia?
Yeah, mine was when Ryu's mum is like, that's my boy, Ryu. He used to live in the basement, but then he got airbending.
I love her so much. It's such a good role. Like, it's so, so unbelievable. So... cool. We've actually got through three episodes in 90 minutes, which is really amazing, guys. Like, we did such a good job. We're so good at podcasting.
Okay. But we need to keep going because we have listener feedback.
Oh. No, we don't. We don't even have any listeners. We don't have any listeners. Who cares about them? Sorry, I didn't mean that. I was just trying to be convenient for length's sake. Okay, contact us if you'd like to give us feedback, which we care about, like, deeply.
Yes, we actually like you.
Yeah, rewatch them.
You're not like us, but we like you.
Yeah, okay. So email rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, Twitter re_watchable, this post on hyperball.com, our parent website, or you can leave an ask on Tumblr. You can also rate us on iTunes and help keep the podcast active on iTunes. So if you rate us 5 stars, then Donya will keep the cucumber aloe water flowing to keep your princely and or princessly skin hydrated and flawless. So, you know, that'll be nice.
Also sounds vaguely sexual. That's really weird.
Yeah, well, don't we all. Cool. All right, so we've got quite a bit of feedback. Oh, my God. I don't even know what's going on here.
There's only two. There's three.
Okay, so first one, I'll just read this one. The Phoenix Queen, it was a comment... comment. I'm sure there was more to this, but I'll just read you a little bit of this comment that just says, if some of you just never get into Cora and won't ever think that she matured or became likable, that makes me very sad, because it is just so the complete opposite of what I saw for her character development. But more importantly, if that ends up being the case, it is what it is. You don't have to pretend you like her or that you're now seeing the development for her character just to appease the Cora fans.
Oh,
well,
thanks,
thank
Phoenix
you,
Queen.
Yeah, Queen.
Don't worry, we will never pretend.
Yeah, and I what I'm saying now, too, because I know it may seem that I'm trying to appease Cora fans, I'm genuinely saying I'm definitely not a huge Cora fan still, but I do see some growth. But yeah. There was so much negativity in the back end that it's never going to appease me.
This is an issue that, you know, it's come up on every single podcast that I've been on with Hyperbole, in that, you know, that at times people, you know, that these are personal opinions, and that at times people get really mad about the personal opinions in the show because that, you know, it's not the same as their opinion, or it's an unpopular opinion, and they think that, you know, and a lot of it, what I've seen recently, it might not be the same with Rewatchable, but it seems to stem from, you know, people believing in some way that because we're on the podcast, because we're voicing it on the podcast, that we're like influencing others to think it, or that we're like taking a stand about it. These really are all just personal opinions, and like that's it. Like, basically, it's not like it means more because we're saying it, if you know what I mean. I hope that makes sense. But yeah, I've seen a lot of people get upset that we are like kind of vocally voicing something that they don't necessarily agree with, because it's being heard on the podcast, that it might influence others. And I mean, if that happens, it happens, but it's certainly, we're not trying to take an official stand and say that like everyone should hate Cora. Like,
except
it's just a personal,
the only official stand we're taking is that Zutara is the best couple.
No.
Yes, if we influence people on Zutara, I'm totally fine with that.
I will definitely take full responsibility for any Zutara shippers that I have created.
Okay, well. Anyway, I hope that point is clear. These are personal opinions, and they're always going to be relatively honest. And if it's something you don't agree with, you know, that's fine. But we're just sort of people having opinions and not trying to force them, I guess, on others. Except each other sometimes. We try and convince each other, but not you guys. Like, all right, so the next ones. Okay, what is this? Saley Marrero.
And I really would like Ariana to read this.
Yes, Ariana, okay. Do you want to read this?
Yes, I haven't read this yet, so let's see how it goes. After so many Hamilton references, I finally gave it a listen. Thank you! But now I'm sort of kind of slightly tiny bit obsessed with it, and I'm half upset that last week's recap didn't go a little bit like this. Oh, jeez.
Oh, God.
In the story of tonight, Kuvir and Batar Sir are young, scrappy, and hungry for Zhao Fu. Cora meets with Su Yin, and she's like, what I miss? After the history lesson, she tries to beg, steal, borrow, or barter with Kuvira. However, Su Yin and the twins don't engage and strike at night, but instead they were outmanned, outnumbered, outplanned, and captured. What comes next? Well, in the Battle of Zhao Fu, Su Yin tells Cora to rise up and attack, but then Cora lost her shot, and she saw the unimaginable and was left helpless. The Schuyler sisters tell this avatar to stay alive and then create a hurricane and finally head back to Republic City. Kuvira was satisfied, but let's face it, we all know they will be back. Oh my god.
That was very a lot.
Okay. Saley Marrero.
That was very a lot.
You can take my job from now on, so.
Oh, it was so good. And it's like the perfect segue for us, because after this, we're recording a special Hamilton episode of Hype, so you should.
Yeah, so if any of you guys, look, you know, if any of you guys have been, you know, interested in our Hamilton chatter over the last 2 months, then you can listen to Hype, the Hyperbole sort of flagship podcast, because a bunch of us, most of us who are actually on Rewatchable, but some who are Hyperbole staff not on Rewatchable, are doing a Hamilton episode literally in an hour or less than an hour.
And we'll also take responsibility for influencing anyone to listen to Hamilton.
Yeah, I actually have been writing like a primer in a Google Doc to like help people understand like Hamilton, that I've got like links to, like, listen to it, and I've got, like, the history of it and, like, why, like, you know, like, sort of a really intense explanation of it for people who are like, what the hell is this Hamilton thing? If anyone, like, wants to be linked to that Google Doc, tweet me. It's really embarrassing, but I will let you into the Google Doc primer about Hamilton if you need a really thorough grounding in it. It's not quite finished yet. I haven't put in all the ham for hams I want people to watch, but, yeah. Anyway, that's how I've been spending my weekend, because I'm cool.
And we have all one right. more.
Yeah, one more. Anjali Singh. Okay, so in 109 Out of the Past during the Yukon flashback, I thought the lawyer during the trial could be a younger Izumi. Also, I've become completely obsessed with Hamilton while rewatching Cora Alone. In my head, I thought Washington was right. Dying is easy, living is harder. Very true. I mean, it's very sound advice, but, that's the thing about Hamilton we're about to go and talk about. It's one of those things where, and it's very similar to Les Mis for me in as well, in that there's so much about humanity and life in there, the way people relate to each other, that there is, like, frickin' Hamilton quote that's appropriate for everything. So, but yeah, and then there's a picture here of a, you know, woman with glasses and a very pointy face and, like, a hairline, and then there's Izumi. Yeah, I'd buy that. Who was she, whose side was she on? Was she on the side, was she defending Yukon, or was she defending the other side, if you know what I mean?
Who knows? We never get to go to the Fire Nation.
Okay, well, that looks like it, you know, and if that was while Zuko was still the Fire Lord, you know, and his,
I want
you know,
a full flashback episode.
You know, Izumi, you know, she went back to New York, you know, she practiced law, you know, tends and work next
she
door.
Perfected it,
like, you know, yeah. So that could be it. God, this is going to be the worst. All right. So that's it. Anyone got anything that they want to say before we finish this up?
Oh, Bolin was back in this episode. We didn't even talk about that. He hugged Cora. That was
nice. Him and Varric come back together, and yes, that's right. Him and Varric come back, and then him and Marco have, I was stupid. No, I was stupid, and they all hug, and him and Cora and Marco all hug, and it's very nice. So yeah, that happened as well.
All right, so next episode, we'll finally get Zutara confirmation. I'm excited for that.
What?
I mean, it has to happen before the series is over, and we only have, like, 4 episodes left, so.
You say that, but I thought Tom and Mary had to happen before Downton was over, so.
Spoilers!
It's still not over. It's not over yet, guys.
yeah, all right. Okay.
He loved her.
I know. Oh, it was stressfully platonic. Let's go, and let's go and get, you know, we'll go, I have to go shower, and, you know, you guys have to have dinner, and then we'll all talk, well, Donya will go to sleep, but the rest of us will talk, very soon, about Hamilton, because we haven't done that enough yet, so, yeah.
All right, bye, friends.
Bye. All right, bye, until next time, I'm Natalie.
I'm Mariana.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Donya.
Thank you guys for listening to us, even if you don't like our opinions. So. Bye-bye.
Bye.